This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's start today with President Trump's debut at the United Nations General Assembly. The president was at turns conciliatory to the international body and at turns critical. He was also unyielding in his threats against North Korea and its pursuit of nuclear weapons.
No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
Well, joining us now with some analysis is Adil Najam. He's dean of the Frederick Pardee School of Global Studies at Boston University. Dean Najam, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So your first thoughts on the president's bellicose portions of his speech regarding North Korea. Totally destroy North Korea if necessary, the president says. Your reaction?
I don't think there was a surprise there. There would have been a surprise if he hadn't been him. There is this sort of the language of a schoolyard brawl that goes between North Korea and the U.S. at the highest level. So in that, there wasn't a surprise. I think the bigger surprise was probably Iran and Venezuela and the language he used for them. North Korea was clearly on his agenda, and he has used that type of language before.
So, I mean, we'll get to Iran and Venezuela in a moment, but I have to say, was there some diplomatic decorum that the president gleefully broke there by
Rocket Man,
right? I mean, the president of North Korea, the leader of North Korea, has a name, but I get the whole Rocket Man nickname from President Trump is certainly going to appeal to his base. But how are members of the UN likely to react to that?
I think they've gotten used to our president by now. They would have been surprised if he hadn't thrown in something like that. Plus, it'll give, 1,000 headlines around the world, and radio stations would be playing it all the time. So in some ways, the presidential decorum has been changed. And the world expects it now from this president, and the U.S. certainly expects it. So it's kind of, we are slowly becoming the new normal. I think the real story is that he didn't break it as much as many people had feared he might. He didn't go to the extent, for example, that he had gone during the campaign, when he was calling the United Nations the enemy of democracy and bad for the United States and so on and so forth. So in some ways, he appeased every base. His people, his core support, he said, send the right message to him, make America great again, mentioned sovereignty, mentioned, the tough image. But folks in the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, would probably be pleased that he didn't go to the extent that he could have and has in the past. Many countries would also be pleased that he didn't go as anti-global ballistic as they had feared. So in that sense, there was, in an odd way, a balance as far as Mr. Trump's rhetoric is concerned.
Okay, so I was seeing that some diplomatic observers or analysts were saying that in a way the president also sort of redefined what his version of the axis of evil would be. That North Korea, obviously, on there. You mentioned Iran, and so here's what Donald Trump said about Iran today.
It is far past time for the nations of the world to confront another reckless regime. One that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing death to America, destruction to Israel, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy.
Now, the United States, over the past many administrations, has been unrelentingly critical of Iran. So what's different about this?
I think the timing is important. So North Korea was very, very strong, uncharacteristic for the United Nations, but not a surprise. The surprise in Iran is the timing. Next month, the U.S. president has to either accept or not accept the nuclear agreement that the U.S. had also signed with Iran. And we should remember, it is not, many people forget, it is not a U.S.-Iran agreement.
Right. Right. But the president speaks as if it is.
As if it's just his, right? Yeah. So there was Germany and there was Britain and there was Russia and there's China, all of whom signed on it. So this type of language coming right before he has to sign it means one of two things, given who's saying it. One is, this is his way of, you know, upping the pressure. This is a negotiation tactic. You need to do more before I would say yes. Or the other, and I think the second one is more likely, he's showing his hand. He, after this sort of language, how does he go and sign an agreement that he has had these things to say about? So this might have been the surprise tweet inside the speech.
Well, but circling back to North Korea then, if, let's say, the president is signaling that he's not going to recertify the Iran deal, if you're in Pyongyang, what motivation do you have whatsoever, not that there are serious talks going on, to trust that the United States would come to a good faith agreement with you on your...
Oh, no, they don't. I mean, they don't. But they don't expect that either. I think Pyongyang has a big smile on their face. You know, when I said he pleased everyone, that includes Pyongyang, because I think they are on a mission, their leader is on the mission, to sort of poke Mr. Trump and get him to say these things. I don't think they are looking for a good faith agreement either. The interesting thing and the disturbing thing for us, I think, is in some ways what I was surprised was how much of the speech was about people who the U.S. perceives to be its enemies. Mm-hmm. And all around the world, he was seeing these enemies. Usually this sort of setting and this sort of place, you do a bit of that.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is this uplifting thing. We are going to, George Bush goes and say, we're going to deal with AIDS in Africa, poverty, and so on and so forth. So there was much more victimhood. And this was a speech that sounded like a weak country rather than a superpower.
Okay, so to that point, let's play another portion of the president's speech. This was one that I personally found very, very interesting. He talked about sovereignty and American sovereignty. He mentioned the word sovereignty 19 times in his speech. And here's one example.
In foreign affairs, we are renewing this founding principle of sovereignty. Our government's first duty is to its people, to our citizens, to serve their needs, to ensure their safety, to preserve their rights, and to defend their values. As President of the United States, I will always put America first, just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
Now,
and he gets an applause.
Yeah, he does. Yes. And it's, at first it seemed a little hesitant, but he got some applause. And so that's why I read that portion two ways. One is where the president is affirming the importance of the nation state, that in order for, you know,
this global, is the realist in him.
Yeah, if civilization to persist and to flourish, nation states are the way to do it. But on the other hand, when he's telling everybody at the United Nations, put the interests of your country first, how does that augur for international cooperation?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I also found this the most interesting thing. He also snuck in, if you noted, this little short little seminar on socialism in there.
Right.
Right. So the professor of international relations in me kind of had a big smile there. This is probably the most intellectual, if you will, or conceptual or academic that Mr. Trump has ever been. As you said, 19 times you said sovereignty. I think this is important. First of all, sovereignty, the U.S. has played always, every country does in the U.N. But in the U.N. in these settings, sovereignty is a word that is usually used by countries whose self-perception is weakness, vulnerability, and victimhood. So Cuba would use it a lot. Saudi Arabia would use it. You know, you can't make us follow your norms of human rights or women's rights because we are a sovereign nation. That's the type of context sovereignty is often talked about in this type of UN. So I've spent my life in these UN places, and sovereignty is a word that a particular type of country uses in this sort of setting. And so that's, I think, what the applause was partly for, because it was such a surprise coming from the U.S. The U.S. is usually the one saying, we must rise to our great global heights,
right.
You know, to our better self, to higher order. So I think that was a very, very major thing that happened. Second, sovereignty is important because I think he's coined a new terms for his followership. He did actually something conceptually quite interesting here. He gave a meaning to make America great again in the global context, right? So the big question was, how does Mr. Make America Great Again go to the world, which he has been saying is kind of the enemy, right? Globalists are bad.
Right.
And go into the enemy's nest and come back. So sovereignty was his way of doing that. He was saying, I will make America great again because I really care about my sovereignty, and you do too.
Yeah.
Right? So this is a very different rhetoric from, I think, everyone from Frederick Roosevelt onward in the global debate.
You know, and to add to that, what's interesting to me is that, again, it's sort of like the Trump administration speaking with a somewhat fractured voice, because on the other hand, Nikki Haley, as ambassador to the United Nations, has shown great American leadership through, you know, helping push through the new round of sanctions against North Korea and the Security Council. So still believing in the effectiveness of, to some degree, of the United Nations being a global player to deal with these international problems.
And in a way, you know, he's doing that. You're seeing in his foreign policy, he's calling on a lot of countries to help the U.S. reach some of our foreign policy goals, right? So North Korea has to be reined in by China.
Yeah.
Iraq, Russia has to go in, not Iraq, Syria, right, and do more on, and so on and so forth. So I think, you know, part of it is just time is making Mr. Trump realize that you do need the global thing, but he's doing it in a very different way.
He's doing it in a very Trump way.
In a very Trump way.
I mean, he told some nations at the UN today that, in fact, some nations are going to hell. And Samantha Power, former UN American UN ambassador, tweeted, telling countries they are going to hell at the UN General Assembly is generally not the most effective way to get them to do what you want them to do. So another view there. Adil Najam is dean of the Frederick Pardee School of Global Studies at Boston University. Thank you so much for coming in
Thank
today.
You.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.